Welcome to Scott Hasn't Seen, the podcast that explores the movie blind spots of deranged human beings, Scott Aukerman. I'm Sprague the Whisperer.
Oh, yeah. Hello, I'm Scott Aukerman.
And you're probably confused, like, why is this coming out? What is this? Guess what? We're doing a little special episode.
A mini-sode
that we like to call Clearing the Air.
Clearing the Air.
Turn the fan on. Blow the smoke out of the kitchen.
We've
got to clear the air.
We got to clear the air because, you know, the format of our regular show doesn't necessarily lend itself to the most nuanced conversations about certain things. And, you know, we've sort of had to, at the end of shows that are already 2 hours, rush through our thoughts on Oscar movies.
Especially when you're talking about a movie that we're actually not covering on the podcast.
Yes.
You don't really get to get into it.
And so, Sprague, you were telling me there's a lot of chatter.
There's a little bit of chatter on the Discord.
On the Discord and in other places about our responses to one movie in particular that's up for several Oscars this year called Killers of the Flower Moon.
That's right. Martin Scorsese. Look,
people are disappointed.
People are mad
that we've had mixed reactions to the film. And because we haven't been able to get into it all that much, what we're saying, sort of assuming we're talking about one thing when we're not, and we just want to clear the air here and talk about what we really think about this movie. And this is a show featuring a conversation between one guy who went to the theater to see it and one guy who saw it home in three different
viewings. Three sittings.
So we're not experts in the least.
But we had complicated feelings about the movie. I think we both think the movie has problems.
But the movie has a lot of great things.
There's some good things in the movie as well. But let's just get into it, Scott.
Let's clear the air. Okay, because I think you and I had the even though we saw it at different times and in different experiences, we had very similar reaction to one very big issue about the film that we had with it.
Yes. Now, my biggest question coming out of watching this film is, why tell the story that way?
Through the eyes of this particular character.
Yes.
That's when the film ended. I had the exact same thing where I was confused almost because I really enjoyed quite a bit of it. I think learning about all of this stuff happening was fascinating. Martin Scorsese can't help but direct something very excitingly. So all the scenes are very exciting. And at the end of it, I said to myself, like, what is going on though? Like, why did I just spend 3 hours with this guy?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people we may have mentioned, like, oh, the original book was based on Jesse Plemons' character, the investigator.
And we're not saying that that is the way that it should have been executed.
I will say, though, the only reason that I'm, like, maybe interested in that take, I understand, since talking about the movie, I've done a little reading that the Osage community was a part of some of the creative decisions that were made, and they definitely didn't want it to be about the investigator. They didn't want the white savior to come in and make the movie about him. But
let's talk about the process of making the movie, because you know, this is a story that exists. It's historical, right? So then, as a filmmaker, you have to choose, like, what's the execution that I'm going to do. Now, I think you and I don't want to speak for you, but I will. We're strong little boys. We both think that the possibly correct way to tell the story would be through the eyes of the Osage community.
Yes.
And through the characters that this affects most.
Specifically, Lily Gladstone's character.
Like, that is the movie that I am most interested in seeing. But here's the process of making a movie. That movie, if Martin Scorsese comes in and pitches Apple TV Plus, like, okay, I want to do and tells the whole story, which I'm sure he did in the pitch.
In like 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds. And then says, like, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to do it through the eyes of Lily Gladstone's character. She's the main character, without mentioning Lily Gladstone at the time. Just this character is the main character and everyone else is secondary. Apple TV Plus probably says, like, that doesn't sound like it's a movie for us because there are no movie stars in it. Why don't you try to, you know, do like what you did with Silence, where it's like you get, you know, financed internationally or whatever, and it's probably like a $10 million budget or whatever. That's not what Scorsese wants to do with this movie. It's like, you look at the budget of Killers of the Flower Moon, it's $200 million.
Yeah.
So he has to go in with a package, right? And he has to go in with, and Martin Scorsese, his name does not open a film like this alone. There was a period probably after Goodfellas where his name did open a film, but it was really the combo of him and De Niro was opening films. Mm-hmm. He very smartly found Leo DiCaprio after Titanic, came to him and wanted to work with him. And he very smartly worked out a collaboration with Leo DiCaprio where he's in several of his films, and that guarantees him the budget that he needs to make these films. Mm-hmm. Right. So he is developing this along with Leo DiCaprio the entire time, with the intention of Leo DiCaprio originally to play the Jesse Plemons part, investigating this. And that will guarantee you a $200 million budget, right? Mm-hmm. So without Leo DiCaprio's involvement in this movie, it goes away, right? And so what I was trying to say when I say, like, the choices when Leo DiCaprio gets involved have made this movie different is something that William Goldman talks about in his second book on screenwriting called Which Lie Did I Tell, where he talks about how sometimes for a movie, the worst thing that can happen to it is a star gets attached. Because, and he brings up one of his movies, which is The Ghost in the Darkness, with Michael Douglas and Val Kilmer.
Yes, this is the Lion movie.
Yes, in Africa movie.
Yeah.
So he writes a really good script, in his opinion. I have no idea. But the Michael Douglas character in that is a minor character who gets killed, and the purpose is a mystery, and the purpose that he serves in the script is to make the other character seem like a badass, because if this lion kills the badass character, our main character Val Kilmer, mm-hmm. like what chance do they have?
And right.
But Val Kilmer ends up killing the lion or whatever. I don't know what the plot is, but Michael Douglas, so the script is just like sitting there. No one's doing it. Michael Douglas reads it, goes, I love this. We're going to make this movie. Suddenly you have a go picture because Michael Douglas is one of the biggest stars in the world and can open a movie. And the combination of Val Kilmer and him gets the financing made.
But now you've got all this baggage.
So William Goldman, and I have not been able to see a movie since then without thinking about this sometimes, which is, with a star comes star shit, mm-hmm. right? And comes the star's needs, the film's needs get subjugated to whatever the star wants. Because without the star, the movie
falls apart. It's not going to get made. Yeah,
exactly. It won't get made. So what William, Michael Douglas, what he wants to do is he wants to add some nuance to this character. And
got to make it a meal for himself.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I get it. There's a selfishness to it, but I also think it's like, you're taking care of your career. The producers are supporting it because they're like, well, we got to keep the star happy, yeah. So let's do
and
it.
And what does the star want all the time? The star wants to protect their brand, which is why you see The Rock like
feuding with
well, also that story about Hobbs and Shaw, about how like they were... It was math of how many punches that they could give and take. Like anytime you watch The Rock in something, you know, he's never going to look not heroic. William Goldman talks about that, where it's like with a star comes like a star wanting to be heroic. And so when I watch a movie like King Kong, I think I bring this up a lot, like Adrian Brody in King Kong, there's no reason in the third hour of King Kong for him to be driving around a taxi, beeping at people going, get out of the way, King Kong's coming. Except like,
you got the star,
you got to have him do hero shit, right? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. So Michael Douglas totally fucks up this movie by giving him a backstory and showing all of his backstory and like making him a humanizing character where he's like a Michael Douglas character now. It totally fucks over the movie, right? Mm. So that's to me when I watch this and I go like, oh, and I read the fact that Leo DiCaprio got involved and said, hey, what if I play this guy instead? That to me is like me going like, oh, I see what happened.
And I, there is some talk on the disc. I don't know. I didn't do a ton of research here, but it feels like this is also based on a book, and the book is centered around the investigator.
Yeah.
And I think when Scorsese went to the Osage community, they were like, please don't make it about this guy.
Right.
I understand making that choice.
I think there's a little discrepancy of like Martin Scorsese said at one point like, oh, what if we made it about the brother? And then Leo DiCaprio said, well, I could play the brother. I don't think Scorsese is doing a whole draft without checking with Leo DiCaprio first to go, mm-hmm. like, what if you played the brother instead? I think it's like a mutual decision.
Mm-hmm.
But what they hear about the character, not brother, he's not a brother, but he's
like a part of the
nephew or
De Niro's family. Yeah.
What they hear about him is like, oh, this guy was actually in love with his wife. And that is a hook. And I don't think that's a bad hook necessarily.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they decide the movie's going to be told through this guy's eyes because Leo DiCaprio doesn't want to play just a boring FBI guy. Totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
The Osage County is like, please don't make it about this guy, mm-hmm. about the FBI.
We don't want the white savior in the movie, which I understand.
And I truly do believe that Martin Scorsese is trying to Trojan horse all of this story into a movie that stars white people. You know, it's like, it's got to star Leo DiCaprio. Otherwise it doesn't get made. And I think he does a good job of telling this story. And I left going like, oh my God, this is fascinating. So I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
And his intentions are pure with it, but you're forced by having Leo DiCaprio in this movie to tell a story of whatever Leo DiCaprio wants to play. And Leo DiCaprio wants to protect his brand, or he wants juicy scenes. Those are the things that are most important. Mm-hmm. Or they want, like, stars want Oscars. They want scenes where they're shouting at people.
Yeah. And to Leo's credit, he's willing to play a dastardly, nasty guy.
Yeah.
Which works.
And I think Leo DiCaprio is like not the worst offender when it comes to movie stars. Like The Rock. I remember my friend wrote a movie recently and was told, the first person we're sending this to star in it is The Rock. And if he turns it down, the movie's dead. And that's the power that these guys have.
Mm.
Leo DiCaprio is not the worst offender. I think Tom Cruise is actually one of the best guys at it, where like he views the movie as a movie.
He wants to be the best he can be for the movie.
Yes. And so like you look at Edge of Tomorrow, he's playing this like seedy con man kind of character who doesn't know what they're doing. Like you watch Mission Impossible and he'll do some of the stunts sometimes and he's not doing it like The Rock does, which is like, yeah, of course I knew I could cool. do that.
No, he's like, I need it to look difficult.
Like, yeah. And he's like crashing through the window in the latest Mission Impossible of the train. And he's like stunned and going like, I can't believe I'm alive. You know, it's like Tom Cruise, I think, is really good at it. Yeah. And Leo DiCaprio is not the worst at it, because you watch The Departed and like, I still think it's a miracle that Departed, spoilers, that he allowed his character to be shot,
yeah,
20 minutes before the end of the movie. I look at that and go like, dude, that's not movie star
shit. Good for him.
That's
also like the choice to just show up in that Tarantino movie as a real nasty racist guy.
Yeah.
Like he'll take some chances. So I'm not blaming anyone that's in this, but here's what I'll say. One, I don't want to have to know everything about behind the scenes to get why a movie is good.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know. I knew the Osage community was a part of coming up with this, but I didn't know all this backstory about it was about this guy and it ended up about this guy. Ultimately, here's my big problem with it. Scorsese, good for you for wanting to tell this story, but it is not your story to tell.
Right.
And we don't have enough native directors with the same clout as Scorsese to get a $200 million movie made about it. So to Scorsese's credit, he's thinking, well, no one else can do it, so let me try.
And truly, I do believe his intentions are pure with it.
Absolutely.
Of like, this is an important story to tell. Oh, shit, Apple TV Plus is going to give me $200 million to tell this story, and my only thing I have to do is cast Leo DiCaprio? Great.
I think that's great. But then the problem is, because he is not of native origin or even a person of color in any way, he has to tell the story from a perspective that he can safely tell the story from.
Yes. And, so, and one that the actor wants to play.
And the actor wants to play. So it becomes a story about the white shitty people around this story. And the problem is there are more interesting stories happening in this movie that we do not get to see because the people making it don't feel comfortable diving into it.
Right.
And I think ultimately, like, I think we were saying, like, oh, I get why it was probably centered around the investigator, only because in that sense, you will be discovering things about this world at the same time as the investigator. Mm. And to me, there's an impact in how hidden some of these things are in our own world. So I understand why that was probably how the book was centered.
Well, it's also probably a reason why the book was popular was you know, it's, this has been like Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
The white savior thing has been, you know,
it
Green
works.
Book. We talked a lot about it with Green Book is like, why, at what point can we put aside the white savior thing of getting people interested in go, like, at what point can we say like, hey, we're just going to make a movie about the story and Leo DiCaprio doesn't have to be in it.
But you know?
No one will go to
it. I even think the white savior thing is like in Green Book, he's like, he's one of the good ones energy.
Yeah.
Where the investigator didn't have to be. And I actually think it would have been better. Like, I'm not saying we should have done this, but if the investigator was investigating this one was kind of like, oh no, white people are doing it and was conflicted by that. Like, to me, that might be a more interesting story. The most interesting story in this whole thing is Lily Gladstone's character.
And her sisters.
And her sister. But just the thing that, like, why is she falling in love with this white guy? What is the, like, she's rich and she's falling in love with this white guy.
Here's my issue with, because I think there is a version of the movie that they made, which is a little more successful for me. Like, I left the movie going like, why that guy? Mainly because they are not successful at what I think they're trying to do. I think they truly are trying to make Leo DiCaprio seem conflicted. I don't think they're succeeding.
No.
I think Leo DiCaprio is obviously using her from the beginning. They show him like starting to date her and then taking her money and gambling right away. Like
He kills the first investigator that came to be like...
He's obviously a piece of shit throughout this whole movie. I think there is a version where... he is truly in love with her. And then at a certain point, like he's happily married. He loves his wife. He loves his kids. At a certain point, Robert De Niro comes to him and goes like, well,
this is the plan.
This is the plan. Here we go. And then he's like, no, you don't understand. Like, and Robert De Niro says like, that's the whole reason that I brought you out here. That's the whole thing our family does. Or him being seduced by the money or something.
Even at the same time, if that's what they're trying to do, I'm just less interested in that.
Yes. No.
Because to me, the story is about, this is a community of people who were mostly oppressed all over the country. And now they have all this money from this oil. And that almost brings them more into like, natural sort of white America, like this
it's a great story about how white supremacy will always try to find a way to win
you get hypnotized by it, how you as a person of color, when you start to gain success, start to think like, oh well, I'm in all these white spaces, I must be accepted now, and you don't realize that you are being taken advantage of. That is an interesting story.
Sprague, I totally agree. I'm just saying, if you need to tell it through this perspective because you have a huge movie star, which, by the way, did you ever see any of the TV spots where they were trying to sell this movie as a romance?
Yes, and I also saw a few of the spots that were selling this movie like a Goodfellas action, like mob movie.
It's kind of neither of those things, but the romance ones were so crazy because it was like they show basically like Leo DiCaprio driving her around in slow motion, like taking her hand. And
I
all
need
this
you
kind
to help
stuff.
Me kill the white man who killed my family. I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
They were hyping it like it's a romance worthy of Titanic.
Yeah, I thought the movie was going to be, oh, at a certain point he realizes the wrongs he's done and he turns on his family and kills all of them. Nope, doesn't happen.
No, and then you read the actual stuff about this guy, and no, he was just a piece of shit who did this. You know, it's like, why tell this guy's story?
So there are so many layers as to why this movie ends up being made the way it is. And for me, as just a movie watcher that doesn't want to have to pay attention to all these other things, I'm like, there is a better movie buried. There are multiple better movies buried in what was made. And a lot of the discourse that I've seen of criticisms of our talking about this movie is that we don't understand what Scorsese was going for. And there's a lot of talk about like, it's actually a meditation on his own work and how he's exploited violence for his, and I'm like, why is any of that interesting? Why do you interpret this movie as something about Scorsese? I don't care. And there, a lot of people are like, oh, well, the final radio play scene, what do you interpret the meaning of that scene, Scott? Because I feel like there's a lot of talk about this final scene and how ties it all up perfectly.
I know some people think that it ties it up perfectly. I think some people's opinion of it is like, it's a meditation on Scorsese saying like, why is it us who are telling these stories when they should be telling them? I didn't feel like it succeeded.
Even if that is what he's going for and is successful at, don't you understand that you're part of the problem? Like, why don't you go support a native filmmaker to make this movie as opposed to having to be the one to do it? And look, I also think he could have, I
don't begrudge Scorsese for wanting to tell this story if he told it through their eyes.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, I think someone like Scorsese going like, look, I can get a movie made. I can get $10 million for this probably. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a $200 million thing, but you know, like, let's make this movie. I don't begrudge him. I would be like, oh, good for him.
And I don't want to say like he's wrong for making the movie.
Yeah.
I just think ultimately my problem with the movie is that it is just kind of warped through the Hollywood machine that you even described. And it just gets further and further away from what I find the interesting parts of the story is. Like, I don't think I'm in the perspective of the Osage community almost at all in the movie. I feel like we're watching them
talked about it on a future episode about how we feel like Lily Gladstone, while deservedly getting a lot of acclaim for the role, is not given enough to do to where maybe she should even be in contention for best actress.
I don't understand why she falls in love with Leo DiCaprio, which I feel like is maybe the most interesting turn in this.
And the other part of it is I think they're saying Leo DiCaprio fell in love with her for her money and there's never any nuance.
It's just not that, like, he's a great performer. So I guess I'm believing some of his like, oh, I do love her.
Every once in a while, they'll show a shot of him kind of going like,
yeah,
you know, which I don't think does it to me. At the end of it, I was like, kept going, Where's the part where he at least has some redeeming feature of like, does he actually love her? And yeah. I kept going like, I think they're trying to imply that he actually loves her. And then by the end of it, I was like, well, no, they just showed him like whacking all of her family and gambling with her money. They never showed him ever. And then when she's like, because I think in this execution, there's a scene where like, and it's a good actor scene. I don't know why it's not in here, where she says, like, were you trying to poison me?
It's done so subtly and so, like, she barely act. Like, it's crazy when they do it.
What if he's like, yes, but look, I do love you. like if there were, but instead he's a total piece of shit. And he goes like, no, I didn't do any of that. It's like we're watching a movie called The Total Piece of Shit. Which is an interesting movie I would probably go to, but...
It's kind of like, you know, I would totally watch it, but...
And I think there are people who are interested in, like, no, I like going to see a movie about a total piece of shit. And it's not like I don't like anti-hero stuff. I just... Because, like, something like The Shield, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever watch The Shield?
I've seen some of it. Chiklis,
yeah. So that's got one of the greatest final episodes, I think, of any TV show in modern history. But Shield spoilers. Mm-hmm. So great opening episode where the guy that your audience surrogate, the guy that we're watching, he's a cop. He's out there on the street. He's sort of beating up people, but he's doing stuff that you've seen on NYPD Blue. And it's not that bad. It's just like, well, he's you know, like playing by his own rules, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The end of episode one, there's been a character played by a big actor from Homicide: Life on the Street that you think is one of the main guys. He's in the opening credits and everything. He is a mole sent to
from internal affairs
to figure out like, hey, this team of cops is like breaking the law. Chiklis at the end of episode one, like just straight up shoots him in the head, which is like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is not the character that we're supposed to be following usually. Mm-hmm, right. And it's mm-hmm. great. Episode, the very last episode, is just one of the greatest wrap ups of it where, long story short, he's called upon to inform on a bigger crime that's happening. And he does what they call a proffer, which is he offers the information that he's going to tell the investigators of like, here's what I know about the crime. If you'll give me immunity, they give him full immunity for everything. As long as and part of what one has to do when you're doing this is you have to be totally honest about everything.
Admit all the crimes
the thing they use all the time is like, if you even jaywalked, you got to bring that up, because if they find anything that you've ever done,
the deal's off.
So you see him like go, okay, here we go. And then he basically, they don't show it, but he recounts everything that he did in the past 6 years, starting with shooting this cop in the head that they have no idea about. And you see at the end, the investigators are just like, looking at him with disgust, and they're like, you're a total fucking piece of shit, but he has immunity.
Yeah.
And he can't even, they can't even fire him, but they bust him down to a desk job. So you see him like in downtown LA in the very last scene, he's got a desk job, 9 to 5. He has to be there, but he's a cop. Like, being a cop is so important to him. And suddenly he hears sirens out on the street and he like instinctively reaches for his gun and his shield. And he's like, oh, that's right. Oh,
that's not me anymore.
That's not me anymore. And he just kind of sighs and that's the end. It's so great because it's like morally ambiguous. What we want is an audience member is like, we want justice. So you want to see him get like his comeuppance.
And you often see cops as the good guys. So to see him as the as sort of a bad anti-hero, like I understand why that story is being told.
So we're not saying like we don't like stuff with anti-heroes. And I think there's maybe a good movie out there with Leo DiCaprio as the anti-hero. I just don't think that the preponderance of it, they didn't show us enough of him actually being a person who loves her, or they love each other, or he's just a scumbag the entire way through.
I think a lot of people will just say this movie was trying to inform the world about this bad thing that happened.
Yes.
And I understand that.
And it does that, and I think it's very successful.
It does that, but there are other ways to do it. And I think it's centered too much on the white experience, in my opinion. I feel like it's a movie that is, the Osage community is a part of it. Obviously, they were a part of some of the conceiving of what was happening. But to me, they feel like...
And they're probably glad the story is out there.
Absolutely. They feel, to me, like an honored afterthought, is the way I've thought about
it. Well, one could also have this discussion about Watchmen, the HBO series, about like no one really knew about the Tulsa Massacre until this came out.
But guess what? They show us the Tulsa Massacre through the eyes of two little boys living in that world.
Yes.
So like, in order to understand what the impact was, I had to live with those people. I don't feel like the impact of it is hitting in the way it does, because I just am not.
You're seeing some of the funerals.
Yeah, you're seeing some people be sad, but they're
you're
all.
Seeing Leo, but then it cuts to Leo DiCaprio going like,
"Yeah,
boy.
it's just not. I'm not getting the actual like preponderance of what this story meant to the people on the ground that it was happening to. Even Lily Gladstone is a character that it is happening to. I don't think they give her enough." Yeah. To have a reaction to it. She doesn't finally come to the understanding that this was all happening to her till the very end. And maybe she was suspecting, but they never give us anything.
They don't give her a scene of like, motherfucker, you were poisoning me. I find that, you know, it's just like her intentions in the movie are very...
It's just hard to read because you're not focusing on
Someone asks her like, are you going to marry that guy? And she's sort of like, oh yeah, all the white guys are bad or something like that. But, well... I don't know. Like,
I just didn't. Yeah.
I think there's maybe an execution where these two people actually care about each other. And then he's seduced by the dark side a little bit more. But to me, it was a little like, honestly, this is people are going to hit me for this comparison. It was a little like Attack of the Clones. Where like, I don't know why.
Didn't think that's where you were going.
I don't know why these two. They're trying to sell.
Together.
They're trying to sell a romance that I'm not buying, and then they're trying to sell Anakin getting upset and turning into Darth Vader in a way that I'm not buying. Yeah. And it's kind of like that for me. Where,
and I understand people saying like, "Oh, he didn't want to make up stuff that didn't happen." I hear that too. I just think we can be in the perspective of the right characters. But look, at the end of the day, I'm not the biggest fan of Scorsese, and I think there are people who love him and want to honor all the work he makes. And as a director, like you said, it's fucking easy to watch. It's fun. There's like cool shots. There's a lot of great directing in it. The acting is good.
If you were to ask me like in our normal show, like, are you glad you saw it before you die? I would say yes. Cause there was enough in there that I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Even for just learning about the story.
Yeah. But, I think it's, you know, it's interesting to talk about. This is the thing. The reason we're doing this is like, it's interesting for us to talk about film, and like every film is a work of art. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, and look, the format of our show plays into this. People were mad at Siskel and Ebert of like thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, because that's such a binary
thing. We do the same thing for humor's sake of like, am I glad I watched this before I died? Like, there's nuance to these
things.
Stuff
to take away from a lot of these movies that we've
even
watched.
Even a film where I'm like, no, I'm not glad I saw it before I died. Mm. Yeah, I can take away stuff from those, you know.
You'll
but
put a line in one of your scripts.
But I think so much of like people talking about film these days is like, these two extremes where people go like, that was the biggest piece of shit I ever saw, or that was a masterpiece.
And if you think it was a piece of shit, well, you're wrong.
Yeah, or if you have any criticism of it, you're wrong. And I think it's interesting to look at these films by some of the masters of the genre, or the medium rather, and just be honest about our opinions.
And at the end of the day, I do not think Scorsese is a bad director. I'm just not interested in a lot of the stories he's interested in telling. And that's my biggest criticism.
But also you don't have a wide breadth of knowledge about some of the like the more different ones. After Hours.
No, I haven't seen those. But yeah, we recently watched
Alice Doesn't Live Here.
And I think like that's an interesting one where I'm like, you know what? This is subject matter that I am more attracted to. But some of his bigger movies, I kind of don't care about.
But I can understand like people out there going like, no. And we're not even saying if you like Killers of the Flower Moon, you're wrong or whatever, because I don't think there's anything constructive in a conversation like that.
Yeah,
I think that it's like, you know, I understand how it is when you love a thing, like when we did the Unforgiven episode. Mm-hmm. Like I feel that's about as perfect as a movie can get. And so to hear you like talk about how silly it was, you know, I got my dander up a little.
Yeah.
Where I was like, does this guy even like take the show seriously? And I still feel that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm obviously taking the show very seriously, but it's like, it's okay to have different opinions on these things. And I will admit sometimes the way I talk about Scorsese can feel a little flippant and like fuck off. And that's maybe just because I feel like some of his fans try to shove things down my throat where I'm like, I didn't quite like that one. And then they call me an idiot or something. I'm like, all right, well, I can't like any of them now.
I also do think it's really interesting. Our Raging Bull episode for this is a movie I've seen 5-6 times or whatever, and even Nelson that we did it with, to reapproach it at a different time in your life where I was like, oh, I think when I saw this at 20, just the machismo in
the
it
and the
coolness of it like blinded me to the fact that like it's kind of an empty experience at the end of it. I don't know. I just think that's interesting to talk about that kind of stuff instead of taking everything as like an unassailable work of masterpiece, you know. I just don't think Killers of the Flower Moon had like what a movie like The Godfather had, which is a character changing, really.
Yeah.
You know, like Michael Corleone comes into that as a war hero, a guy who loves his family members but hates what his family does, and then is telling his wife that there's no way he's going to get sucked up in this. And then by the end of the movie, he's sucked up in the crime family and he shuts the door on his wife. So to create a literal barrier between them.
Yeah.
That to me is like a change that Leo DiCaprio's character never went through. He just kind of like was shifty and an asshole. And then at the end, even
he got his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Which I feel like sometimes is like, oh yeah, but don't you see at the end of the movie, he got arrested. I'm like, okay, like,
who gives
a shit? I guess that proves that it was all
everyone
wrong.
Everyone in any period movie is dead by now.
that they must have been wrong.
Everyone got their comeuppance, technically.
Well, anyway. Do you feel like the air's cleared?
I feel like we cleared the air. This is the first time we've done it, but just according to you, the pushback, we just want to make sure our thoughts on it were clear.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that we're shitting on, like, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, you're shitting on the film bros out there. It's like, I'm not shitting on anyone. My opinion is this. And your opinion can be that. Take it or leave it. Just don't say we don't understand the movie. I think we get it.
No, it reminds me of when I saw the movie In the Company of Men, which I don't know if you've seen, but no. Neil LaBute movie. And it was being sort of, it got really good reviews. And so I went to see it and I was like sort of appalled by it. Honestly, I was kind of like, it's all about two very misogynistic men who I think it's been a minute since I've seen it, but I think they have a competition or something about, you know, sleeping with women or something like that. Mm. And they technically get their comeuppance in it, but it is literally just 2 hours of characters being misogynistic. And I was like, I feel like this is an excuse for the director who also wrote it to just
do all of
do misogyny.
Things. Yeah.
And oh, they got their comeuppance at the end, you know? So I had that response to it. And then I saw someone that I knew at a party and they were like, did you see In the Company of Men? Wasn't it incredible? And I gave my sort of nuanced, in my opinion, take on it. And the person just looked at me and went, yeah, some people just don't understand, and walked away. And I was like, motherfucker, I understand better than you.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's how we, this is just...
This is the world we live in.
But that's the fun of doing a film podcast, which our podcast isn't even really serious, like Blank Check can get. But and they have the worst fan base in podcasting.
God, you know? I don't even want to look on their Reddit to see what Killers of the Flower Moon response was.
And ours are all nice, but I think you were getting a lot of blowback about
it. Yeah, not in a mean way, just in a way of like, well, how do you not understand this? Scorsese is my favorite. And it's like, all right, well, we can clear the air on a pod.
You know, when I went to see A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, like Kulop really actively disliked it, but it led to us talking for 2 hours about it after the movie, about me going like, oh, I think they were maybe trying to say this. They were maybe trying to say this, and her going, oh, that's interesting. But why would they do, you know, like that is the exciting part about
that's fun
doing a movie podcast where it's not necessarily just like, oh, this is the funniest, best thing ever made. Let's recap the plot. Or this is the worst thing ever made. Let's dunk on it. It gets you thinking.
It gets you talking. And I do think that the conversation around this movie, while maybe not my favorite, while flawed in my eyes sometimes, I bet it'll lead to movies being made about similar subject matter in a better way. So,
yeah.
In that case, good for you, Scorsese.
Good for you. By the way, and I bet you appreciate Sprague saying good for you.
I hope you're listening, Scorsese.
We know you
good
are.
Good for you. You know he listens on 2X speed, by the way.
He talks on 2X speed, and that's because he listens to so many podcasts that way. He's used to it.
Well, Scott, when it comes
to a little
film. A little film called Killers of the Flower Moon,
Scott and Sprague
have seen. And then they cleared the air.
Scott Hasn't Seen is produced by Scott Aukerman, Sean Diston, and me, Brett Morris. Theme song by Devin Bryant. Sound off in the CBB World Discord, and we'll see you next week.